Tonight I'm going to talk about the chakras. And it's an interesting topic for me because I realized reflecting on this, I could probably talk for 3 hours on the chakras and I don't want to do that. So this is just highlights of the seven chakras. First thing I'll say, I'll assume that we're starting from square one and people, you know, maybe people have never heard of the chakras or are not familiar with them. I don't know. So if you consider the question, what is a complete human being? The very traditional Western answer to that, the traditional Christian answer is a human being is a body and a soul. And the body is entirely material, the soul is entirely immaterial. And then that raises the question, how does something completely immaterial affect something material? They call that philosophical problem the ghost in the machine. But that's the Western view, and that led very directly to people just rejecting the idea of the soul and assuming that the complete human being is nothing but the here and now body. Another understanding that grew out of the yogic traditions is that there are layers of subtlety. And so they would call this body, the tangible body, the gross body. And then there's a more subtle overlay on this body, the subtle body, which is sometimes called the aura or the energy field. And then a more subtle layer after that. And then as you get to higher and higher layers of subtlety, there's more and more interconnection with everyone else. The highest level of subtlety would be cosmic consciousness, God himself, you might say. And in the Hindu understanding, cosmic consciousness, Brahman, is identical to Atman, the inmost being inside all of us. And so in this understanding, the next sort of rung up from the physical body, the energetic body or the field, chakras, you might say, are the seven major organs on this body, on this subtle body. So the chakras properly belong to that body, which is closely aligned to the physical body. Incidentally, acupuncture meridians are also properly on that body. And so I realize that one question that skeptics would have is, you know, are chakras real? Is any of this stuff about the energy body real? And I'm actually singularly uninterested in that question, actually. I would say that I have found looking at the world through the lens of chakras, understanding my own experience, understanding human interactions, using this as an interpretive tool, I have found very, very helpful. And I'm really not attached at all to, well, are they real or not? I don't really care about that too much. And so I'll talk about the seven chakras. Before I talk about them individually, I think I'll say that the upper chakras tend to be more spiritual, more ethically aligned. People who tend to come to a meditation group tend to be relatively well-developed in upper chakras, as a general rule. The lower chakras, as we go down deeper and deeper into the body, we come in contact with more and more visceral power. And so the raw power associated with the lower chakras is humbling to the mind, to say the least. In general, people who are developed in their upper chakras and not developed in their lower chakras are kind of sort of, they're half here, you know. It's sort of like people who are, you know, they have all the best intentions. They want things to be, you know, they want to have a world that is full of love and joy and all that, but they can't really affect much to make that happen in the world. Meanwhile, if there were someone who were very empowered in their lower chakras, but not connected to their heart and their upper chakras, that person might be very powerful and manipulative, and really impact a large number of people in a negative way. What this world mostly needs are people who can embody the energy of the higher chakras, but connect it to the power of the lower chakras so that they can powerfully bring spiritual values into the world. That is what we most need in this world. So having said that, I'm going to share this in the chat. I'm going to share this chart I created. I noticed we just got a Marco tease. He joined us and left us. Probably having Wi-Fi trouble tonight. And so I just organized a bunch of information about the chakras on this chart. The chakras have a rough correspondence to the glands, the seven glands of the endocrine system. Most people are not all that familiar with the glands of their endocrine system. I'm going to start at the top and go to the bottom. So the top, sometimes called the crown chakra, and underneath the name of each chakra, I give the Sanskrit name, Sahasrara, sometimes called the thousand-petaled lotus, growing from the top of the head. This is our connection to God, to spirit, someone with a very powerful, open crown chakra would experience silence, transcendence, a deep sense of sacredness, a deep sense of meaning and sort of connection with the larger world, connection with purpose. And so there's a lot that is potentially powerful about the crown chakra. At the same time, if someone gets too, as it were, too fixated on that chakra and is not occupying anywhere else in their body, then they get kind of spacey and kind of, you know, you very much get the sense of someone who's like not here with the rest of us. And I've certainly met many energy healers who were impressive as energy healers, but they weren't fully here. They were, you know, up in some other place. The sixth chakra is right here. It's sometimes called the third eye. This is where Hindu women wear the bindu, the red dot. Associated with minds and ideas, the strength of this chakra is ultimately a kind of clarity, bringing a kind of clarity and a kind of vision to life, a vision that brings life alive. That's really would be one of the strengths of the third eye. In some ways, it's hard to talk about the sixth chakra, because this is a chakra where, how to say it, we live in a very head-centered culture. And so what happens in a head-centered culture is people are very much up here and they're not connected to the energy of the lower chakras. And it is it's the nature of the strategic mind that it doesn't realize, first of all, it doesn't realize that it's not in control. And second of all, it doesn't realize that it is entirely at the mercy of visceral feelings. So visceral feelings, whatever they are, shame, guilt, fear, whatever, they come welling up, and then the mind spins its wheels and justifies those. So much of what's going on in the head is lower chakra stuff, and we're not even aware of it. We think we're being rational, but we're actually playing out lower chakra stuff in our brains. And you really have to quiet down the spinning engine of thought to really open up the power of, you know, the clarity of the sixth chakra. The fifth chakra, right at the base of the throat, certainly associated with our voice, with our expression. You know, how powerful is your voice in the world? How powerfully do you communicate? How powerfully do you influence others? Are you comfortable speaking your unique truth, your perspective? Are you comfortable asking for what you need? All of these are associated with the throat chakra. And it's important to realize, you know, we're talking about voice, but the throat chakra really corresponds to a lot of all the ways that we express ourselves and everything that we communicate with our being. You know, part of what's tied up in that is even our choice of profession. Sometimes the back of the throat chakra is called the professional center. And if you think about it, you know, even that word, a profession, of course, that's a word for a job, but a job is one of the most powerful statements I make. It is the statement I make by professing it every day by doing it, you know? And so, you know, what I live out in my job, that's a powerful thing I communicate. My posture, that's a powerful thing I communicate. You know, the expression on my face, especially the resting expression, my face is relaxed. You know, what is that communicating? You know, like all of this is part of what we're communicating. And you know, words are only a small part of that. The fifth chakra is associated with the thyroid gland of the endocrine system. The thyroid gland controls metabolism, controls our, you know, the energy of the body, and even just our energy level communicates so much to people. You know, I'm a high school teacher, and how can I say? I mean, I have to project constant excitement in order to keep these teenagers engaged. If I got up there bored, I would lose them all immediately. You know, the excitement itself is an important part of the communication. The fourth chakra is the heart chakra, right in the middle of the chest. So it doesn't exactly sit over the heart, which is off center. It's exactly in the middle of the chest. And certainly this is associated with everything that we would call the standard heart qualities, you know, compassion, love, kindness, forgiveness, these sorts of things. But it's also associated with authenticity. It is also, you might say, a kind of antenna for what resonates with my deepest self, you know. Does this resonate with who I truly am? We feel that in our hearts. You know, is this job congruent with who I really am? Is what my friend is asking me to say or do, does this resonate with who I really am? You know, it's in our heart that we feel that. Grief is one of the emotions we hold in our heart. Grief impacts the heart primarily, because grief often is about some sort of dear connection, either connection to a loved one, connection to, you know, an ideal, or, you know, a phase of life that was very important to us. And often people, you know, when they're in the first intense place of grief, you know, people describe it as, I feel like a hole has been blown in my heart, you know. And it's important to feel grief. It's important to let oneself feel fully the new griefs, the old griefs, all the griefs of life. The more fully we can feel the griefs, the more open our hearts can be. The third chakra, Manipura, the solar plexus. This one is associated very much with boundaries, with power. And a few of you heard me say this when I talked a couple weeks ago about boundaries, but I like this metaphor. If you think of the digestive system forms a powerful physical, chemical boundary in our body. You know, I put all kinds of food into me, you know, plants, animals, chocolate, whatever, put it into my body. And then my body decides, what do I let in and what do I not let in, you know? And really, digestion is the process by which not me becomes me. You know, I take all the food that is not me and I turn it into me. And so think about the analog with emotional energy. We're all bombarded with messages all the time. You know, you should be this kind of person. You should be that kind of person. You should believe this. You should believe that. Well, if you're this kind of person, you should believe this. If you're that kind of person, you shouldn't believe that. You know, we get messages from the media. We get messages from certainly family and friends, even strangers, even the way we walk through the world, we elicit reactions and we're picking up those reactions and changing ourselves because of those reactions, you know. Of all the messages that come toward me, how discerning am I? Am I able to say, that doesn't resonate with me, that doesn't resonate with me. Okay, that message does resonate with who I am. I'm going to take that in and make that part of me. And so it's, so having a healthy third chakra is kind of the emotional or energetic analog of having a healthy digestive system. You know, you can handle what the world, as it were, dishes out to you, you know. And it's called the power center because someone who's very discerning about that is very powerful, you know. If my third chakra is not very well developed, then I'm susceptible to the messages and influences of others. And then I can get jerked all over the place. I can be made to feel like a victim, you know. So victimhood and all that stuff is third chakra stuff. When I feel like other people are manipulating me or controlling me or anything like that. When I have a healthy third chakra, nobody controls me. Nobody tells me what to do. And I'll say, incidentally, in spiritual work, a lot of times people have questions about having their heart open, you know, isn't it possible for your heart to be too open? Because if I have my heart too open, then I feel too much and people take advantage of me. And often I find the problem is actually the relation between the heart and the third chakra. If the third chakra is strong, then I can have a very tender, open heart because I'm discerning about what impacts me, you know? And so we actually can be much more open in our heart when our third chakra is strong and powerful. The second chakra is slightly below the belly button. This is the place on the body that corresponds to the Dantian point in the Chinese, the Qi system, you know, in Tai Chi. All the motions of Tai Chi should flow from the Dantian point. This is associated with the water element, with the wild, flowing, uncontrollable energy of life. And so part of what it's associated with is just being an animal and everything that feels good about being in an animal body. So sexuality, dance, exercise, all that, all the, you know, the physicality of movement, the joy of being an animal in motion. And part of it is also, how do we relate to the watery aspect of life? You know, a lot of people lock up in fear. Fear is a huge second chakra thing. And I put the word polarity, that only begins to capture everything that's going on with the second chakra. Second chakra is about all kinds of retention release dynamics, you know. The people who talk all the time, the people who never say a word, the people who spend money all the time, the people who are afraid to spend a dime, you know, the people who gush emotions all over the place, or the people who, you know, how are you doing? Fine. You know, the people who are completely flat, you know. We're seeing all kinds of this in playing out in the COVID time, you know, the people who are the mask fanatics or the mask haters, you know, like all this, you know, the people who go to one extreme or the other as far as how they're reacting to COVID. It's very human to go to one extreme or the other. Buddhism is asks us to find the middle point between the extremes. And the middle point is hard because the middle point is not a fixed place. It's a place of being comfortable with flow. It's you might say a fluid dynamic balance is what Buddhism is asking of us. In Chinese, there's a word. There's the great Taoist classic, the Tao Te Ching. And the title is three characters, Tao, De, Jing. Jing is just classic. So Tao is the flow of the universal flow. And the metaphors that they often use are like water flowing. And Da, it's often translated as virtue, but it has a very specific meaning. And Stephen Karcher gives this wonderful translation of what is meant by that. He says it is the ability to follow the ongoing course traced by the cosmos. So that ability to be in sync as the cosmos is flowing. Not an easy thing to do, but this is the virtue that is praised in the Tao Te Ching. All kinds of addictions come out of the second chakra. You know, what is your relationship to pleasure? You know, do you have permission to feel pleasure? Do you have permission to, be fully alive? All these sorts of things. And then the first chakra. The first chakra is at the perineum. So it's behind the genitals, in front of the anus, between the legs. And you can imagine kind of as you're standing, a golden cord of light coming out of the bottom of your torso down into the earth. This is the root chakra. And so the root chakra is associated with all these really fundamental kinds of things, associated with money, with stability, with family, with tribe, with trust, with safety. Am I safe? Am I protected? Do I have my people around me? Am I supported in the world? Is it safe to be here in the world? It's associated with fundamental survival questions. This is where shame is held often, because shame is the feeling that I don't belong here. And so it's very much an injury to the function of the first chakra. It takes tremendous spiritual work to get in touch with the lower chakras. Often the way that we contact the lower chakras in everyday life is those times when either, we say something and it triggers somebody else, or somebody says something and it triggers us. And it's those moments where, like, the one wrong thing, and then it just completely and, cataclysmically ends a friendship or a relationship, When somebody has, when there's some kind of exchange that triggers a wounding at one of the lower chakras, it is such a powerful reaction. With more violent people, someone might kill somebody else, but with more kind-hearted people, they just shut somebody else. They shut somebody out and never talk to them again, And so it's so important for us to do our work with the lower chakras, to get clear with those powerful energies, because the more I can be clear and equanimous with those powerful energies, the more I can hold space for others when they're going through those things. So the bottom of the quote sheet, at the bottom there are some quotes after the chart. So I'll just go through these quotes. I have Stephen Karcher's definition of that Chinese character. From St. Augustine, and I love this quote, love and then do as you like. And this is St. Augustine, this very conservative Christian theologian. But he realized, if you really have love, then everything you're doing from a place of love is going to be okay, St. Francis of Assisi, whose feast day was yesterday, said, While you are proclaiming peace with your lips, be careful to have it even more fully in your hearts. You know, and it's always interesting to communicate, you know, is the thing I'm communicating with my mouth, is this really something congruent with my body and with where I am in this moment? Thomas Merton said, the whole idea of compassion is based on a keen awareness of the interdependence of all these living beings, which are all part of one another and are all involved in one another. Edward Abbey said, has joy any survival value in the operation of evolution? I suspect it does. I suspect that the morose and fearful are doomed to quick extinction. Where there is no joy, there can be no courage. Without courage, all the other virtues are useless. Marion Woodman, talking about the dark goddess, says, she faces us with our greatest fear, and by showing us the treasure hidden away within it, she takes us to a place where love is born. Love is the true antithesis of fear. It expands where fear constricts. It embraces where fear repels. Brené Brown, on the topic of boundaries, says, compassionate people ask for what they need. They say no when they need to, and when they say yes, they mean it. They're compassionate because their boundaries keep them out of resentment. Michael Culley says, true freedom arises when you do not want anything from anyone else, and so from this fearless state, you will be at peace with yourself and all beings. This is a beautiful gift you will bring to the world by letting go of the addiction of the self, one less being demanding that life will always please and satisfy them. J.R. Rim says, flying starts from the ground. The more grounded you are, the higher you fly. And Marty Rubin says, there's nothing to seek and nothing to find. We leap into the darkness only to discover how firmly we are rooted in the ground.